Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have back as a guest today Sarah Weinman, who is the host of the blog Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind, as well as a prominent book reviewer. First of all, Sarah, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
Sarah, I get asked a lot by people, they say, what is a blog? And so for people that are longtime listeners to the show, but technologically are maybe kind of straddle generations or aware what blogs are, they understand them, but they have questions about them. How do you answer that question when you're asked?
Well, I guess ultimately I view a blog as a continuously updating website where if you have any content or pictures or anything you just want to say that you'd like to share, either with a small group of friends or to a larger audience or even for pay as sort of a complement to journalism, then a blog is a great way to get your message out there to have a means of saying what you want to say, and it's a great way to build up an audience. So really, ultimately, a blog is short for weblog, I might add.
They've
been around at least in the form that we know now since about the early 2000s, although the first blogs started up in the late 90s. There's a tendency now to call all websites blogs, which I find very amusing.
Yes.
I've been on the internet since the mid-90s, so I've seen, like, incredible change and the rise of blogs as a really effective medium for communication. So, essentially, I mean, it sounds a little amorphous, maybe, but a blog is really what you put into it, and if people find out about it, and there are many ways for them to do so, and a readership is attracted, then blogs can then be a jumping-off point for a great many things. I know in my case, starting a blog really changed my life.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I have you on the show occasionally is that you have a foot firmly in the world of book reviewing and a foot firmly in what we'll call the blog world. And so I think that when did you start your blog? And I love the title, Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind. And are you still happy that you titled your blog with that title?
It's funny because I chose that title really on a whim when I started blogging a little less than, oh my gosh, 4 years ago now. Mm-hmm. It seems so ancient in terms of the blogosphere. I mean, it was a bit of a fanciful name. I really had no particular reason for it except that I like the sound of it, and I like the word idiosyncratic because it certainly describes the many interests that I have. Even though the blog is primarily about fiction and about news and views and commentary and everything to do with the genre that I love so much, occasionally if I happen across a story about, I don't know, some guy drunk in Wisconsin and was found without pants, and then the pants were later found with a $31,000 check in his pocket, if I think that's funny, I'm going to post that, or I'll post a clip to a YouTube video that's funny, or to anything that's sort of related to the book world but might not necessarily be about crime fiction, or it might be about forensic science or true crime-related stuff because I have a strong interest and background in that. And so that's where the idiosyncratic part comes in. As for whether I would choose the name now, I mean, it's a little unwieldy, but I'm kind of stuck with it, and it certainly makes the title and the blog stand out from other ones.
Yes. I particularly am fond of it, but I understand what you're saying is when you start sometimes, like when I started what I'm doing, I had no idea that it was going to evolve into what it has become. And part of what we're talking about is the changing nature of how publishers and authors promote their work. And I think that the blog community and websites, which are two distinctly different things, have altered the way the books are now published. And it feels to me like we're kind of at a watershed moment of how our publishers are going to promote their work in the world we live in today. And so when
it's a very good point you bring up. I think I really feel like I'm in the eye of some kind of publishing storm, and it will take years to figure out sort of who quote-unquote won, who lost, what worked, what didn't. Everything from Google book search to an incredible rise in using the internet and online-related stuff for self-promotion, I mean, there was an article as of today, which is September 4th. I'm sorry, it was over the Labor Day weekend in the New York Times. They finally, as I jokingly thought about it, they finally cottoned on to using blogs as a means of a virtual book tour, which is a concept that's been around for several years now and used quite successfully. And there's even a site now called booktour.com where authors can now make their tour schedule available, and libraries, bookstores, and other sort of non-traditional venues can get access to that and figure out how to get in touch with the author and help bring that author to their community. So the internet is totally changing the way that people communicate and also the way that the authors can self-promote. The downside is that because there's been, I think, an incredible rise of author blogs, what seems to happen is that they end up kind of talking to each other, and the readership ends up being limited to, say, other authors looking for the secret of how to get the word out and how to attract more readers. But to attract more readers, you actually have to reach readers who might not necessarily be paying attention to author blogs. So it becomes a little bit of a self-defeating cycle. And I think the trick is, as more ordinary people get online more and more, then perhaps they have to be drawn in and figure out, well, where do we look? Where do we go? What will attract us? And you know, certainly the internet is a great way to do that when it's effective.
And as well as like the article you're referencing, some other articles have been written talking about there really has, in my opinion, there's kind of a difference between promoting a book, reviewing a book, and criticizing a book. And sometimes the three have very distinct purposes, and they're not necessarily the same thing.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, if I'm reviewing a book, it's meant to give an honest opinion as to the book's merits and weaknesses, and there's no promotional component whatsoever. If I started doing that, especially for the newspapers that I write for, I wouldn't be able to write for those newspapers again. It's very clear to keep advertorial and editorial very distinct. The promotion side and the content have to be kind of kept in two different windows.
Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that I'm always very interested in is it seems to me that a lot of times in the past, some book reviews were written that were kind of mean-spirited, and the person writing the review was trying to make a name for themselves when they did that. And that is something that is a fine line to walk, I think, when you're asked to review things, because you always have to maintain that integrity of not, you know, picking yourself at the expense of someone else. But at the same time, if you don't like something, you know, you really have to say that. And that's really where book reviewers are different from websites or blogs, where, you know, if you want to choose to write primarily positive things or just review books you like, I have the luxury of just being able to interview authors whose work I admire. I don't keep a list of authors whose work I don't like.
No, I mean, it's not necessarily effective to, you know, maintain some kind of, I guess, chain of negativity. However, I must point out that there are blogs who do try to be in the critical fray, who aren't necessarily going to be, say, all cheerleading all the time. I think you're right. The vast majority of, if not literate, the book blogs that have really come up, I think, really since I last spoke with you about 2 years ago, there's really been a proliferation of very book-friendly blogs, and that's great. It's a wonderful way for readers to get together and discuss the books that they love. Now, I will say, though, as a critic or as a reviewer, it depends on what your definition, what the publication, what their merits are. For the most part, I'm pretty lucky, because for the Baltimore Sun, whom I've now written for about 3 years, I pretty much have carte blanche as to what books I can choose to review.
Mm-hmm.
And unless there's a really compelling reason for me to give a negative review, like let's say it's a major release or it's a book by a writer who I truly love, who writes something that's just profoundly disappointing, I won't comment on it.
Sure.
But since I only have 200 words in which to write about this book, and I have to convey some degree of what it's about, why this book has some merit or why it doesn't, it's probably, I'm just more inclined to pick books that either I really like or at least I feel there's a strong audience of people who will like this, even if it might not necessarily be my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the things I really try to do, especially with the Sun column, is pick books I might not ordinarily read. So the column I just turned in for the September one, which I'm not sure it'll probably have run by the time this interview airs, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Margaret Cole, called The Girl with Braided Hair. I think I'm getting the title right. And she's an author who writes very kind of traditional Tony Hillerman-style mysteries. Someone who I not ordinarily read because those books aren't necessarily to my taste type. If I had my druthers, I'd be reading hard-boiled and psychological thrillers all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the people who are reading the column, they're not all going to be in line with my taste. If anything, some of them might vehemently disagree or oppose reading hard-boiled fiction. So I want to be able to cater to as wide a potential readership as possible and just, you know, give them something that they might enjoy or seek out or recommend. And even if it's clear from what I write that it might not be to my taste, there's something in what I say that says, oh, well, Sarah might not totally be into this book, but at least she's giving it a shot, or she can see that there's really... that there's some serious merit to it, and that's why there's an audience for it. So essentially, I'm trying to understand what sort of mysteries people are reading, why they're reading it, and why they might be good.
Mm-hmm.
And for the LA Times column, again, I have a fair amount of choice, but it's a little different because they're much more, at least the way I've envisioned them over the last few months, they're much more sort of essay-driven. So the most recent piece that I did was on... mysteries and thrillers that had some kind of tabloid edge. And that's because I really wanted to write about Alison Galen's standalone novel, Trash, which is set at a tabloid newspaper. And it's a really, really great satire of celebrity culture and the like. And the mystery element is good, but I think the satire is really what makes this book work. And so it got me to thinking, well, what other books also exploit kind of a tabloid mentality? And I found, much to my surprise, that there weren't that many mystery novels that really went deeply into this. I mean, even something like Jane Bellroy's American Tabloid, based off the title, you might think that, oh yeah, it's about tabloid celebrity-like. And it really isn't, of course. It has much larger societal themes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to sort of compare and contrast the title and the content.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, and I noticed today you made reference on your blog, which is for the listeners, it's www.confessionsofanidiosyncraticmind.com. And
actually, it's www.sarahwineman.com.
Oh,
that's all right. I don't actually have that domain name reserved because it's far too long to type in.
Thank you. And Sarah, would you spell that for the listeners?
Sure, it's SarahWeinman.com.
Thank you, because I have it bookmarked as confession, so I apologize.
No, that's fine.
You made a reference today about, I think it's the kind of novel that you're talking about, Our American King by David Lavelle Martin. This is a kind of book that they sent me to galleys a few months ago, and I started reading it. It's a very difficult novel. But at the same time, it's a novel that deserves an audience and deserves to be read. And I think that's where, you know, what people do in the blog world and the reviewing world, sometimes they can help a title that deserves to be read. Another case in point right now, I just started Dennis Johnson's Tree of Smoke, which is an incredible novel. So you don't want these important works of fiction and literature to come out and go unrecognized in the marketplace right now.
No, that's absolutely true. And the other reason I mentioned David Lavelle Martin is because I'd actually reviewed his previous title, Facing Rushmore. And it was a really curious book because it had the premise of what would happen if Native American Indians essentially decided to try to take back the United States. And I was reading this with a mixture of fascination and almost dread as I tried to figure out what Martin was going to do. And he ended it by really pushing it to a limit that in the end I thought was rather over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But I also admired that he was ballsy enough to go in that direction. So as soon as I heard about Our American King, which I also have a galley, but I haven't plucked out of the PBR pile quite yet.
Right.
As soon as I heard what the premise was, I thought, wow, this is really audacious. I just hope that it's going to find its audience. So when I read Patrick Anderson's review this morning, I thought, well, here's somebody who is really trying really hard to get this book. And I also think the reason that he enjoyed it as much as he did is because he and Martin are a similar generation.
Mm-hmm.
They both, I think, kind of came of adult age in the late 60s, my understanding is the premise really kind of depends heavily on a return to 1960s counterculture values. Now, I say this without having read the book.
Right.
That was certainly the impression I picked up from the review. But the other thing that's interesting about Martin, and I do want to kind of write about his career at some point, is just he's never done the same thing twice. He's written a gory serial killer novel. He's written literary fiction. He's just written all over the map. You really can't pigeonhole him. And I think, especially with current publishing climate, where authors are by and large expected to write the same thing with perhaps one or two deviations over and over again in order to build up that readership. He's really kind of an enigma. It's like, well, what do you do with him? Do you market him as a literary writer? Do you market him as a thriller writer? Do you market him as a comic writer? If I were a publisher, I'd wonder all those things and just do what I can with the source material.
Sure, sure. Very good point. And Sarah, one of the things that I see is the roles that universities and university presses play today is changing as well. You mentioned that about David Lizelle Martin, the counterculture. I think part of what we're dealing with here is a transition to a technological society. And it's really a lot of people that read books tend to be women that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And a lot of them are just really, you know, getting computers, getting online, and getting access to these kind of things. And so it's like you mentioned earlier, kind of feeling like you're in the eye of the storm. I feel the same way. Is there's this huge growing market of people that want access about the books that they read, and they're becoming more proactive in searching out what they want to read about the books that they like, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's been a real proliferation in sort of social networking sites that are geared towards books. I mean, just off the top of my head, we have Goodreads, where people can log in and post sort of short reviews about books that they like and then connect with other people who like the same books. There's Shelfari. There's, I think, Lovely Books, which is based out of the UK. I know there's a number of them that I'm remembering right now. And then, of course, there's ways for people to connect via MySpace, Gather.com. You know, Facebook has books-related applications. I mean, I think one real strength of the internet, and this just it goes you know far beyond books, but just about common interests. I mean, I remember when I was 14 and 15, and I had certain interests which I had no way of sharing with anyone I knew growing up. So the internet was a real lifeline. It's like, well, this is a way for me to talk about, say, my favorite sport or my favorite books or my favorite TV shows. Nobody else cares about them. All my interests are obscure. But here are other people who share these obscure interests. Oh, there's a forum for me to connect with other people who I might not normally associate with in my so-called normal life. But this is a way for me to sort of not only connect with people who share interests, but then learn more about them. They could learn more about me. And it was sort of a real sense of virtual community. And I think just because the internet has become far more mainstream as more people have gravitated towards it, it's changed the way, certainly people of my age, I'm in my late 20s, and anyone younger than me, it's just part of their waking normal world now. And then as older people become more likely perhaps to get a computer, sign on, and essentially go through what I went through as a teen, but are much older.
Mm-hmm. And sir, are you still able, managing your time and your commitments? I would imagine that that's one of the challenges you deal with on a daily and weekly basis. And how have you dealt with time management and for reader, for listeners of the show, you know, I mean, we're talking about getting books in the mail on a daily basis that aren't coming out for 4, 5, 6 months from now. It really becomes a challenge in terms of how do you handle your time?
No, it's a really good question. And until very recently, I also, aside from my own site, Confessions, I also co-edited the publishing blog, Galley Cat. I have since left to essentially pursue more freelance opportunities. But 2 years of covering the publishing industry was an incredible experience. I mean, I got into contact with major players in the publishing industry, attended a lot of social functions, learned a lot, and most importantly, learned a great deal about the business that helped me not only in understanding how the crime fiction genre fits in, but also in terms of my own writing. So over those last 2 years, I've also been able to publish a lot of short stories, really pick up on the freelance front. And in terms of the time management, it's a good question because I work hard, but I also am the world's biggest procrastinator. I think a lot of prolific people go through those cycles where they stare at the screen going, why can't I get my work done? And then there's just this incredible burst of activity. So I get stuff done, there's no question. And ultimately, I think what really helps is deadlines. I'm a big fan of deadlines. I think my entire life should be done to deadlines. Because if I don't have a looming deadline, amazingly, work just doesn't get done.
Sarah, what's the biggest surprise that you had over the last couple years of being immersed in the publishing world? What did you come away, not come away with, but what surprised you the most?
I think, in truth, it wasn't really a surprise. It was more of a confirmation. When I started covering the publishing industry more seriously, I always figured that publishing was very much a crapshoot and that a lot of people kind of had to throw things at the wall to make it stick. I think what struck me is how often behind the curve publishing is. Like, for example, they're still very much hung up about having authors have a MySpace page when most of the kids have long moved on from MySpace, which I think is ridiculous to navigate. My own preference is towards Facebook these days. But point is that publishing is on a very slow cycle, but books take about 18 months to publish, give or take a few months. So no wonder they're sort of working about 18 months behind what everybody else is working behind. But on the flip side, I think what also surprised me is just despite the fact that publishing is a business, there's still so many passionate people who, despite the fact that there's an incredible, say, high burnout rate or all the difficulties in terms of publishing a book and keeping an eye towards the market and satisfying the bottom line and making sure that Barnes & Noble and Borders and Walmart and Costco are all happy, that, you know, people still have enthusiasm and a soul. I think that's, you know, that everybody, you know, there are lots of genuine, honest-to-goodness, good people in this industry.
I agree wholeheartedly. And there are a lot of misperceptions about publishing, and I do think that a lot of people are caught up in that time lag that you talk about. And if you look at newspapers today, the changing paper, just of the media in general, I think that one of the things that's going to be very interesting, how it's going to play out over the next couple years, is what is the next generation of media? What's it going to look like? How are authors going to find and maintain an audience? And how is somebody going to break into that market?
Well, in the end, I mean, it really is a truism, but it really is true that if you write the best book possible, it will find some sort of audience. Now, what that quote-unquote best book possible means, my definition is that it's the best book possible with the potential to reach some kind of mass audience. So, you know, after years of reading, I can tell generally that a book may have a very limited audience because, say, it's a mystery with very tightly defined constraints, or it's a big thriller that has some kind of global appeal, or, you know, the stakes are really high, the writing is really good, so people are really going to gravitate towards that book. And of course, you know, like everybody, there are books that I'm shocked take off, and there are books that I thought would do gangbusters that don't. But ultimately, no matter what delivery system we have, be it the book, be it the internet, be it mobile phones or text messaging and the like, it really is about content. If it's compelling content, people are going to find it. And to sort of bring it back to the early part of this conversation, it's the same thing for blogging. The reason why certain blogs attract a wide audience is because that blogger has a really compelling voice and strong content. So that's why I often say when I'm asked to speak about the role of blogging in the book world is that blogging and books have a very compatible relationship because ultimately it's about voice. And if your voice is really unique and it's really strong and it has a way of pulling people in and keeping them coming back and then attracting even more people, then that audience is built and then people are further, opportunities essentially come about as a result.
Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly with what you say is that when people ask me, how can I get a book published? I say, you know what? Take your time, write the best book you can write, and don't submit it, look for an agent until it's ready to be submitted. Make sure it's perfect. And there's such a rush to want to get published these days that people really have to back off the pedal a little bit and let their work season and read and develop their craft because you can find a market if your work deserves it.
Yeah, I think what strikes me, too, is the number of people whom I've met who really want to be published and don't read.
Yes.
It kind of staggers me, in fact. And also the number of people who really think there's some kind of secret elixir as to how to get published, when in reality, it really does boil down to you've written a very good book and you have some kind of hook, and it might not be purely market-driven. It's just something that will make either an agent or a publisher sit up and take notice. But I think I mean, it isn't quite what you asked, but I have a feeling that listeners might be interested. But I've always felt that the biggest misconception about, say, trying to get an agent or trying to get published is assuming that there is some kind of myth about it. If anything, maybe it's because I live in New York and I know agents and I've met publishers and like, but ultimately they're people.
Mm-hmm.
They have likes. They have dislikes. You know, they have good days. They have bad days. More importantly, their time is so stretched because, by and large, they're managing all the authors they already have. There are administrative duties to take care of. So to be able to get yourself out of the slush pile I wouldn't say it's infinitesimal probability, but it's certainly small because there are all these things going on in their daily life that to be able to get their attention, it means it has to be so compelling. It has to be really just utterly amazing. And if you as a writer have any doubts, then the agent or the editor is going to see them right away.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Sarah, I really want to thank you for taking the time today. I really, for listeners, I really strongly recommend you go to sarahwineman.com. We'll have this featured on the homepage. And I'd also like to thank you for all you do to promote authors, and I wish you the best of luck in your own writing as well. What are you working on right now, your own work, that you're most excited about?
There are a couple of things that I'm sort of loath to talk about at the moment. I'm a little superstitious.
I understand.
I fully believe that things could fall through at any moment. What I will say is that I'm working on a mix of a nonfiction project, a novel that really must be revised, several short stories, and many more freelance projects, whether about books and publishing and also about other topics that strike my fancy.
Very good. Well, best of luck, Sarah. It's great getting caught up with you. I look forward to doing this again down the road, and may all your reading be very enjoyable.
Say the same thing for everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sarah.